Good evening. Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is WDIY 88.1 FM. You can also find us on WDIY.org for more Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Rhea Malhotra, your host this evening, and doing our audio engineering today is Mr. Seamus McGrogan. This is the fourth edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse's monthly segment, The Teen Scientist, where we bring you groundbreaking innovation in the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics disciplines entirely from a teenage perspective. We also highlight excellence in high school independent research and technological development. This is our first episode of the new year, and today I'm so glad to present two talented seniors. First, Amulia Palutla and Ahmed Abdel Azim. On air with me right now, we have Amulia, our first guest, a senior from Pleasant Valley High School, all the way from Riverdale, Iowa. Her research is focused on environmental engineering and sustainable agriculture. Next, we'll get a chance to talk to Ahmed from Appleton North High School in Appleton, Wisconsin. He has worked on single-cell genomics in plastids and the evolutionary behavior of bacteria in antibiotics. We're so excited to have both of these incredible students on air with us today. So let's get started right away with Amulia. Hi, Amulia. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for taking time to talk with us today. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how old you are, how long you've participated in science research, and perhaps how you got involved?
Sure. So right now I am a senior in high school and I'm 17 years old. I participated in science research ever since fourth grade in elementary school, where I got involved with our elementary science fairs. I remember my first project was the loss of vitamin C in carrots due to cooking. I've been involved in science research ever since elementary school, and I've been doing it up until now.
What about science has made you love it that you've been doing it all these years?
I think the reason why I have been involved in science research for a while now is because I love having the opportunity to research topics that are important to me, and I found passion in a lot of my science research. I'm really involved in food insecurity and solving world hunger, and science really allows me a way to participate in those sorts of projects and getting to understand the topic better and coming up with solutions, which is important for me.
So it's really about the impact for you. So let's delve right into your actual research. So you've worked at the University of Iowa on food sustainability. So can you tell me a little bit more about that research specifically?
So for my research at the University of Iowa, I studied soil erosion and soil degradation that prevent crops from reaching their full potential in terms of yield and nutrition. Well, our research there focused on tracking soil erosion and the movement of specifically phosphorus through a field when subjected to a rainfall event or when it rains. This information from the project was important because it can be used by farmers to efficiently distribute nutrients in a field to attain highest possible crop yield while lessening the nutrients' impact on runoff water quality.
Do you think this was more relevant because you live in Iowa where the economy is really based on agriculture?
Yeah, I think it was really relevant here specifically due to the big farming culture. But I also think that a lot of countries deal with soil degradation and pollution and unsustainable agricultural practices. So a lot of the results that I attained could be applied in places definitely outside of Iowa.
So like you were saying, what nutrients did you specifically track? Was it just phosphorus, or were there other minerals in the soil that you tracked that were important to crop success?
Right. So there are two different minerals that we wanted to focus on, which were nitrogen and phosphorus, but we recognized that it would only be possible for us to track one nutrient at a time. So for the time that I was there, which was approximately 5 weeks, we just tracked phosphorus levels because those are important in crop yield and crop health to figure out whether they were directly correlated to elevation on a hill or rainfall events that occurred while I was there.
So what did a day in the lab look like for you? Were you actually going out and obtaining these soil samples, or would you receive these samples and run tests on them?
Right. So every day was different for me in terms of, in the beginning of my time in the University of Iowa, I spent a lot of time learning from my mentors and the grad students that were around me as they taught me how I would be able to engage in this sort of research and what background information was important as I had to understand what geophysical fluid dynamics were. But as I went on, I spent a lot of time in the field because for our project, we had to use mesh bags, which collected phosphorus on the hills. And then towards the end, I worked more on my poster presentation so I could get the results out to my peers. So I think every day looked different depending on the time, but I spent a decent amount of my time researching and also being in the field.
Yeah, so you definitely did participate in all stages of the project. How did working on that project change your outlook, at least on the world you live in or the scope of sustainability specifically?
Right. So I knew that a lot of this research in solving world hunger and agricultural and sustainability had to do with societal and economic solutions, but I didn't realize the application of environmental engineering in this field. And now that I have recognized the importance of that, I realize that the research in this field could be more effective with the hand-in-hand work of societal, economic, and engineering solutions. So this changed my scope on science in terms of I recognize that a problem doesn't have to be solved necessarily with just one form of research, but can work hand in hand and even more efficiently together to solve a problem.
Definitely through an interdisciplinary approach. So was that the first time you had ever worked in a real lab environment? And if it was it intimidating at all?
Yes. So this was the first time that I had ever worked in a real lab environment, and it wasn't very intimidating. However, I was a little confused in the beginning because I didn't know exactly what I had to do, what resources were available, and where I would start. But my mentor and the graduate students who worked with me alongside me in the lab made it really easy for me to get accustomed to the lab, and as time went on, I felt very comfortable where I was.
Did you have any science exposure before that had led you to be interested in working in sustainability and hunger research?
Right. So before I went to the secondary student training program at the University of Iowa, I had done some research on food insecurity in Indonesia for the Global Youth Institute, which is a conference that's near here. For that research paper, I studied unsustainable agriculture and came up with solutions to problems that Indonesia faces currently. That research is what propelled me to finding summer research at the University of Iowa where I could further my interest.
Was your research specific to Indonesia as a nation, or do you think we can extrapolate these findings from your study to other cultures like our own lifestyle here in the U.S.?
My research was specific to Indonesia as a nation, but I still think that we can extrapolate the findings to agricultural practices here in the U.S., because although the geography is different and the education system is different, I think that with understanding how we can implement the same sustainable practices based off of different geography, it'll be a lot easier for us to apply it to different countries.
Over the summer, you also had the opportunity to work at the MC's lab at MIT. So what was that lab working on, and what was your role in their research?
In the MC's lab, they work on visualizing geophysical fluid dynamics, which would be all sorts of geography and water bodies. So for me specifically, I worked on visualizing geophysical fluid dynamics of ocean data. So for example, water velocity, salinity, and temperature. And with understanding these different characteristics of the ocean, it helps with knowledge of coastal activities and shipping and safety on the high seas. We're hoping that with this visualization, researchers will be able to have a better idea of how the ocean is working and which ways of trade routes and other paths would be more time and money effective.
So do you think by being able to visualize the fluid dynamics of the ocean, it would primarily help marine biologists, researchers, or people working industrially in shipping?
I think that with this information, all types of people or researchers would benefit, as a lot of people use the ocean as a resource. And with that sort of understanding, a lot of research or industrial activities would be more effective and time efficient.
What was the greater impact and importance of this study, maybe outside fluid dynamics? How do you think working on the project affected your goals personally?
Well, as I spent time in the MC's lab, I got a better understanding of how coding and visualization are important. And I believe that for my goal specifically of reducing world hunger and food insecurity, I can use these visualization techniques to apply them in food insecurity and agricultural sustainability. And through that, I would be able to reduce the unsustainable practices that farmers engage in around the world.
So, Amulia, in your personal life, you're very involved as a state-recognized rower and clarinet player. How do you manage doing all of this along with your research?
In order to do all of these things, I have a pretty tight schedule, and I have to make a list of things that I have to do every single day so I know exactly what to do. It's time management, but I think by engaging in specific activities during the school year and then engaging in other activities during the summer really helps me organize my time and put in my full effort to whatever I do.
Do you have any suggestions for other students who are busy with other activities to also pursue their interests and get involved in research like you did?
I would say that it's really important to make a plan, and if you're really passionate about something and you really want to continue doing something, it's important that you do it, whether it be now or later. A lot of people think that it's not possible to do all the things at once, but I'm definitely here to say that it is possible for sure.
As a senior, if you could go back in high school and if you could change anything or redo any moment, would you have one and what would it be?
Generally, I would say that I would not change anything. I think I participated in all of the activities that I had wanted to participate in, and I gave my full effort in all of them. So I'm actually really happy with how things turned out.
That's great. So really going through high school with no regrets. Well, Amulia, it's been inspiring hearing from you and all your experience, all only at the age of 17. It's remarkable. And we are actually going to take a quick break. So thank you so much to Amulia for being with us today and telling us about your involvement in science. When we return, we'll have a chance to talk to Ahmed Abdel Azim, a senior all the way from Appleton, Wisconsin, about his groundbreaking research in antibacterial resistance and plastid-based cell differentiation in plants. Once again, we were just talking to Amulia Palutla from Pleasant Valley High School, and I'm Ria Malhotra on Lehigh Valley Discourse. You're listening to The Teen Scientist on WDIY, and we will be back with you shortly.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
For program support on WDIY, we thank A1 Towing Allentown, offering light-duty road service in addition to towing. Open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year to serve your needs. For more information, 610-774-9994 or a1towinglehighvalley.com.
Hi, welcome back to the Teen Scientist on Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is WDIY 88.1 FM, and I'm Ria Malhotra once again. I'm now here with Senior Ahmed Abdel Azim, and he's calling us from Wisconsin. We're so excited to have him on air with us today to discuss his vast experience in biology research. Hi, Ahmed, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
So thanks for being on the show with us. Before we get into the details of your research, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how old you are, when you got involved in science, and maybe why you've stuck with it all these years?
Yeah, so I'm 17 years old, as you said, from Appleton, Wisconsin, and I've been involved in science for probably as long as I can remember. I think my earliest encounter was in the third grade. I read this book called Microbe Hunters that basically told the story of all these early microbiologists and their path of research. So that was really inspiring for me. And then in the sixth grade, there were like some science competitions and science fairs within our school. But I think when I really started doing research, scientific research, it probably was in seventh grade. But yeah, ever since I was little, I've been really interested in this stuff. And that passion has carried all the way till today.
So you said your first projects were in elementary and middle school, but Can you tell me a little bit more about your microbiology studies more recently in high school with antibacterial substances like honey at Lawrence University? What was the main outline of those research projects and what were your major findings?
Yeah, so it started back in the seventh grade for my first project. I made like a homemade incubator and like bought some bacteria and some petri dishes and stuff. And I was really interested by this thing that I heard about called antibiotic resistance. So basically, I did a project in seventh grade showing the effect of exposure and concentration on antibiotic resistance. And after publishing that study in like a middle school journal, I decided to pursue it even more in professional environments. So that was the research that I did at Lawrence University, specifically looking into honey and whether honey can be an alternative treatment to antibiotics, not so much clinically, but just studying how bacteria respond to honey. I've read a lot of research on anti-mutagenic, anti-proliferative, anti-quorum sensing properties in honey. So we wanted to look into that. So I reached out to the professor at Lawrence University, decided to study that, and it carried out for quite some time, probably about 2 years. And we ended up publishing a lot of some papers on the antibacterial properties of honey.
So what is antibacterial resistance and why is it such a problem today in modern healthcare?
Antibiotic resistance is basically something that Alexander Fleming, who discovered penicillin, talked about. Basically, if you continue exposing bacteria to antibiotics, eventually they'll start overcoming it. So antibiotics that were previously effective no longer become effective because bacteria mutate and they develop mechanisms of resistance, which kind of makes the antibiotic no longer effective and we have to look for new ways to attack the bacteria. So that's obviously a problem in modern healthcare. And a lot of pharmaceutical companies are looking for alternative treatments. And that's what led me to honey and stuff like that.
So do you think for researchers and biologists in the field, do you think it's more effective to constantly look for ways to develop new antibiotics or for ways to target antibacterial resistance in existing medications and drug therapies?
One thing that I've been looking into a lot recently, the prospect of personalized medicine. I think some people obviously have different levels of antibiotic resistance within their systems. So I think if modern medicine could be tailored towards each patient based on their profiles, I think that would be a better approach. Instead of giving someone a spoon of honey, just studying those mechanisms of resistance and being able to predict the most effective treatment, I think would be the most effective thing moving forward. But there's obviously a lot of research that has to go into that before that goal can be realized.
You said you worked on this project for approximately 2 years, but you published numerous papers on such research. Did you move from one idea to the next? How did one project lead to the next phase of the study?
I think it was all just cumulative. So again, seventh grade, I started studying antibiotic resistance. Then there was started studying honey and the antibacterial properties of honey. And then from that study, we branched off a little bit too. So one study that we did was quantifying the antimicrobial effect of honey. So we had a glucose control, just some sugar, and treated bacteria with that. And we had the control and all that sort of stuff. And we were able to quantify the effect, the unique antimicrobial property of two types of honey. And then another branch was we developed a computer simulation of antibiotic resistance and the pattern at which that resistance is gained because we found a stepwise pattern of resistance. Mm-hmm. So I think it was all just cumulative, finding something that was compelling and then expanding that into a full research project. I think it was just that cumulative nature was really cool to see.
So you went from these honey studies to this past summer being a research intern at Harvard Medical School. So can you tell me a little bit about that transition and your research at that lab over the summer?
Yeah, I worked in the Deborah Marks lab at the Harvard Medical School, and I worked on a bioinformatics project, which was a transition from the wet lab to the dry lab environment. But I did see that understanding the underlying genetic mechanisms would be the next phase of my research. So I think pursuing that at Harvard Medical School was quite interesting.
Was it really different for you to think about biological and even microbiology problems from a genetics approach or a single-cell genomics approach?
Yeah, it was definitely different to think about it, and it just offered another layer of understanding towards antibiotic resistance or towards diagnosis in general. So I think that was really cool to see, yeah.
What was your project in the Deborah Marks lab at Harvard Medical School?
My project looked at plastid differentiation dynamics. So I was trying to see if using single-cell RNA sequencing data, I can examine the developmental pathways of both the plant cell and the plastid within that cell. So that was kind of cool because previously no one had used single-cell data to look at organelle development. So that was the first person in the field
to really study that.
I think
that
it was just that introduction to single-cell that was really cool.
So what are plastids and how were they helpful in distinguishing plant cells?
Plastids are just organelles in plant cells. I think the most common type that most of us have heard of is chloroplast, but there's also other ones like ameloplast that just have different roles within the plant cell. So, for example, ameloplasts are involved in gravitropism, just the plant sensing where it's up and where it's down. And what was the second part of the question?
How do you use plastids to identify cell type, and how can you do this through single-cell genomics?
Basically, we had the sequencing data, and we were able to look at marker genes for cell types. And based on the expression of those marker genes across our data, that we were able to identify the types of each cell. And then we had some genes from the plant proteome database that were also used to identify plastid differentiation dynamics within those cells.
So did you yourself do the sequencing, or did you more focus on receiving the sequence data and studying that relative to existing gene databases?
Yeah, so I didn't do the sequencing. I got the single cell sequences from an online database and then used that data to study plastid differentiation dynamics.
And what's so unique about the single-cell genomic approach? It's really been an advent in modern biological research, but what makes it so unique and what advantages does it bring to biological analysis?
The alternative to single-cell would be bulk sequencing, which basically takes a homogenized sample and you just look at the gene expression within that sample, but you lose that individual cell heterogeneity, which is why single-cell sequencing is so powerful. We can actually tell how cell A and cell B that are right next to each other, how they're different in their gene expression. And that gene expression goes a long way. You have different cells in your body, all with the same genome. So that expression is what determines what cell type it's going to be. So if we can examine that cell-cell heterogeneity with such a single-cell level, I think that was powerful.
How does your plastid study have application in human cells, for example? Because plastids are in plant cells. What's the impact of this study outside of pure botany itself?
I think one thing that we were able to do in this study, find gene expression levels for certain genes early on in the differentiation pathway. So if we look at a cell going from type A to type B, right? And we find that as it goes from type A to type B, there's certain genes that are expressed highly in that differentiation pathway early on. Can use that to precisely predict the type of cell at the end of that pathway before actually reaching the end of the pathway. So that has a lot of applications in, for example, cancer research. If we have a cell and we're able to early on detect what type of cell it's going to end up as, we can tailor our treatment to that. So I think that's probably the biggest application, is just finding those marker genes early on in the pathway.
So you're really using the gene expression data to identify the cell life cycle almost and predict which cells could be pathogenic or diseased and almost problematic in the future.
Exactly, yep.
So what are some of the next steps you can make based on this study, and how do you think the lab will proceed moving forward?
I think the next steps in this study are to generalize the pipeline that I use to human cells, for example, like you mentioned, and just going outside of the realm of plants. That would be one pathway. Mm-hmm. Another one would be to focus on plants. There's this big field of plastid biotechnology. So if we can predict plastid differentiation, maybe later on we can even manually alter that differentiation pathway, which opens the door to the development of a lot of antimicrobial substances and vaccines and all that sort of stuff. So I see two different branches from this study.
Was it a shock going from your microbiology lab at home to the research powerhouse at Harvard Medical School, or do you think some of the skills you had developed earlier in high school had really helped you?
I wouldn't say it was a shock per se, but what I did see was I was really excited to be in this new environment. I was surrounded by world-renowned computational biologists, people whose papers I've been reading for years. So that was really cool to work alongside such world-class researchers.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that was quite different was the time limitation I had. RSI was 6 weeks, and 5 of those weeks were dedicated to research. So that time limitation was different. You know, like in the lab back at Lawrence University, spent hours in the lab on the weekends just preparing media and culturing bacteria. But here, I would have to go quick.
It was much more intensive.
Much more intensive, for sure.
In the future, do you want to continue working on similar projects in plastid differentiation or antibiotics, or do you think you would want to try and branch out into other fields?
I think I'd want to use all that I learned from working with single-cell data in the context of plants to address problems in humans in terms of like personalized medicine, as we talked about. I think just using that knowledge and applying it out beyond just plants would be something really cool that I'd want to pursue moving forward.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but it was really nice to talk to you, Ahmed. Thank you for being here with us today, and thanks to both Amulya and Ahmed for being on The Teen Scientist. It's been inspiring just to listen to both of you speak about your work and experience in STEM, and thank you for tuning in with us today on WDIY's Lehigh Valley Discourse. We were just on air with Amulya Palutla and Ahmed Abdel Azim, so a huge thank you to both of them for speaking with us today. And as always, thank you to Seamus McGrogan for doing our audio engineering this evening. I'm Ria Malhotra, and this is WDIY 88.1 FM Radio. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we'll see you next time on The Teen Scientist.